Hello, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For those who have been listening to The Raptor Show so far this season, we have shows Monday to Friday on the station from 2 to 3 p.m. And during the season, we'll have an additional weekend episode on Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. And as always, you can find all the episodes. Just look up The Raptor Show wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Alex Wong, and I'm joined here today by friend of the program, friend of the community, just my friend in general, the Scores, Joseph Cacciaro. Cash, how's it going, man?
Things are pretty good. I mean, pretty good Saturday morning after that game last night.
Oh, I thought you were going to say pretty good Saturday morning because you get to wake up, make a Negroni and espresso and talk to me, bro.
Now, come on, man. It's a little early for the Negronis. What do you think I am?
So I wanted to ask you, Cash, obviously the Raptors, I'm not sure you could ask for a better bounce back win coming off that disappointing home opener than last night, 115-83 in Boston for Boston's home opener. You know, anytime you can beat the Celtics on their home floor with Paul Pierce wearing a DraftKings hoodie courtside, you know, I feel like that's got to go in the top 75 all-time Raptors franchise moments. Lots to talk about. Where should we start?
I mean, we got to start with Scottie Barnes, don't we?
Yeah, no.
We talk about Paul Pierce. This guy was the truth last night, literally. Like, you talk about not being able to ask for a better bounce-back game from the team in general, but from a 20-year-old rookie in his second game to do that, at the Got It? Come on.
I know. 25 points, 13 rebounds, 11 for 17 from the field, and the Raptors outscored the Celtics by 29 points when he was on the floor. He had the highest plus-minus of the night. Let's start with just what he has shown on the offensive end, because that is something that was obviously the big topic, you know, around draft night and when people were comparing Scottie versus some of the other players, notably Jalen Suggs, is that the offense was a work in progress and it was going to take a little bit to develop on that side. But I don't know, Cash, I feel like he's way ahead of the schedule based on what I saw last night.
Yeah, he's absolutely ahead of schedule. If you read any of the scouting reports on him leading up to the draft, if you watched any of him at Florida State, like, this did not look like it was in his repertoire yet. And yeah, sure, once the Raptors drafted him, the hope was that the Raptors could do what they do on the player development side, and he would develop, you know, a jumper. He would develop some range. He would develop more, you know, finesse in his individual offensive game. I think the finesse and you know, the showmanship was already there in the playmaking side. He's a great playmaker for his size, but the scoring in the individual offense was supposed to be miles behind. And, you know, I'm not saying that there are not going to be nights this year where he struggles, because there are going to be. But if you just look at the way he scored 25 last night, like, sure, there was, you know, a lot of it was just his energy and offensive rebounds and cuts, and he is a very smart off-ball mover. But, you know, there were plenty of just kind of like walk the ball up and let me just step into this mid-range jumper. He hit that three early in the game when the Celtics were giving him space. I think for me, the most encouraging thing when we talk about how ahead of the, you know, ahead of schedule he already is in the offensive end is how comfortable and, you know, just natural he looks when he is just flowing into that kind of short jumper, the mid-range jumper, when he is taking the three, when they're giving him space. Like, you just have to be thrilled with that offensive development already, because he is so young and it was literally his second meaningful NBA game. And, you know, yeah, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, but it does make you wonder, whether you're a media person, a fan, an observer of basketball in general, how good this guy can be if he's already showing these offensive flashes in game two of his career, when we know that his defensive upside is just ridiculously tantalizing. Like, he's already an impact defender, which, you know, even good defensive players, when they're rookies, are usually defensive zeros. This guy's already an impact defender on that end. So, yeah, I mean, you just start to think and wonder about how good this guy can be, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. But I get that it's two games in.
Yeah, so let's play a few clips here. Here's Scottie Barnes on his performance and the Raptors' performance from last night.
When I just play hard, it just, and the team just give us confidence, it just helped get me going. Me just playing hard throughout the game, it just really just take things off my mind, and it just helps me play more free. But I feel like we just moved the ball a little bit more today. There's better opportunities in this game. And it just sometimes it just led to my hands being able to score the ball.
Yeah, and here's Nick Nurse on Scotty's performance last night.
No, I thought he was excellent. What I liked the most is he looked, you know, he was at the front of the rim a lot tonight. Right. He was really on putbacks and cuts and drives and that's what we, you know, like to see. He's getting, you know, be able to use some of that size and length. But he had a really good game tonight, that's for sure.
So Cash, I was browsing your Twitter feed, you know, in preparation of the show. You know, for anybody who wants to get into sports media and host radio, this is what you do for prep. Just scan your guest's Twitter timeline from the night before. And I got to say, let me know if you agree with me, because I know you had a few tweets about just how people were giving Masai and the Raptors a hard time when draft night happened. You know, the expectation going in was Jalen Suggs was going to be the pick at number 4. A lot of people were surprised by Scotty Barnes. Man, even after just watching last night's game, and the thing is, like, he's not going to average 25-12 in his first season. We're going to see a lot of ups and downs. But when you're able to flash that type of potential in your first NBA road game, to me, like, Scotty Barnes is already like a slam dunk draft pick for the Raptors.
Yeah, and as I felt on draft night, and I still feel now, like, look, don't get me wrong, I understand why people wanted Jalen Suggs. Me, myself, you know, not being a professional scout, only going what I was reading, watching, sure. Like, I thought, you know, Suggs, even the one surprise I'd say right now is that I thought Suggs would definitely be the better rookie. And I know he still can be. We're 2 games into an 82-game season. But, you know, I'd say Barnes had the higher ceiling. Suggs was the more sure thing in the short term. But the thing I never understood, okay, you know, wanting them to pick Suggs is one thing. I didn't understand why people were so low on Scotty. And especially when you consider the Raptors' history in the Masai Ujiri era and the player development history in the Masai Ujiri era of being able to develop guys' shots, of being able, like, look at OG. I know he's, you know, had a terrible start to this season from a shooting perspective, but they've turned, you know, I'm sure he's done plenty of work himself. I don't want to just put it all on the Raptors' development staff, but still, they've helped turn OG into a great shooter for the most part. And that was the guy that came in the league, you know, with considered a shooting zero or close to it. So I just didn't understand when you look at the length, the skill set at his size, the playmaking, the defensive ability, when it was just, okay, this guy might not be able to shoot and this individual offense is a problem. I didn't understand why coming to Toronto and this player development program, why people were so down on the pick and acting as if, you know, the Raps had just passed on Michael Jordan for Sam Bowie. Like, come on.
Wow, deep cut. I know if Will Lou's listening, he's furiously looking up the 1984 NBA draft right now to understand that reference. No, but no, you make a great point. And by the way, like, everybody definitely check out last night's Slander Pod, the post-game React Pod with Will Lou and Assad, who was recently voted one of the top 75 accountants in Toronto. No, I think it's a great point. And I almost think, I was thinking about this morning, I know the Raptors get so much credit for, say, finding a Norman Powell in the second round or drafting Pascal towards the end of the first round. And some people might say, hey, it's a top 5 pick. It's the number 4 overall pick. Of course, you know, you expect them to get an impact player. But I almost feel like it's even harder to nail a draft pick when it is a top 5 pick. When you look at the history of lottery picks and you look at the history of all these flops and players who flamed out, I almost feel like this, like, kind of trumps everything, like all the other picks that we celebrate, if Scotty does turn out to be this player that we expect him to be.
Yeah, well, I think the problem with a lot of, you know, executives, franchises, whatever, is that, you know, they either try to get too cute in the lottery or high in the draft. They maybe put too much emphasis on position and how a guy fits into the current plans, as opposed to just drafting the best player available and figuring out the rest later, especially now in this, you know, something close to positionless basketball that's sweeping the NBA right now. You know, there was a lot of people that thought when they drafted Barnes, like, well, I guess they're going to trade Siakam now because there's overlap there. It's like, no, not necessarily. How about you wait to see what it looks like on the court and you wait to see how these guys play together? And then again, you make decisions as seasons progress, as, you know, development curves progress, as the years go on, but you draft the best player available or the player that you believe will be the best player long term, not the player that is the most NBA ready, not the player that you know, will satisfy the most fans. And I think that's what Masai Ujiri and his team clearly did here. And I think that's what so many franchises, you know, whether you look at like the Sacramentos of the world or whoever it is that consistently bungle picks in the top five, top 10, the lottery, whatever it is. I do think for whatever reason, they just don't subscribe to that theory of let's draft the player that we believe will be the best player long-term, regardless of any other circumstances, and we'll just figure out the rest later. And I think Masai's done that with Scotty.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Sacramento Kings. I feel like they are just the go-to example whenever we have conversations about this. I don't even remember. So people might not know, I used to work with Joseph Cacciaro at The Score. And when I was there, I wrote this story and I called the Sacramento Kings like a masterclass in mediocrity. And I got an email from their PR team like 3 minutes after it published. And I never replied to it. And I just want to say the Sacramento Kings are still the masterclass of mediocrity. Anyways, back on topic. So just to give some context, so per Chris Black, aka at Down to Black on Twitter, Scotty became last night the youngest player in Raptors history with a 20 plus point, 10 plus rebound game, passing Chris Bosh and Tracy McGrady. So if you feel like we shouldn't be showering all these superlatives on Scotty after last night's performance, you're wrong. This is Scotty Barnes propaganda from now on. Now, for the team on defense, once again, scanning through, love seeing your reactions during Raptors games. They're giving up 87.4 points per 100 possessions through two games. What can you say about what you've seen on the defensive end so far?
It's madness. It's absolutely insane. Look, I was saying coming into the year that, as a lot of people were, it was no secret, their defense was going to be good. I, you know, repeatedly said, I think they have a chance to compete for the best defense in the league. I think their defense could be scary good. And this is without Pascal Siakam, you know, who we know is just a beast in terms of covering ground, getting out to shooters, recovering. Like, adding Siakam to the defense as it looks right now is actually unfair. And even just the number you put out, 87.4, like, look, yes, it's a two-game sample size, and obviously the smaller the sample size, the more warped some of these numbers can get. And I would caution people to realize that as good as I think the Raptors' defense will be this year, it will be nowhere near this good because it literally can't be over the course of a season. But in the modern age of you know, NBA ball and the way points are put on the board, I don't care if it's two games in opening week or two games in the middle of the season. You have a two-game stretch where you allow 87.4 points per 100 possessions. That's bonkers. Like, to put that in perspective for people that maybe aren't as familiar with offensive rating, the Lakers had the best defense in the league last year, and that was by allowing 106.7 points per 100 possessions. The best defense in the league last year. So two games, the Raptors are allowing less than 88 points per 100 possessions. This defense is insane. And as I also tweeted last night, like, I think there's going to be a lot of times this season, and, you know, it was the case last night early in the game when they went through this offensive drought. I think there's going to be plenty of times this year where they go through these really ugly offensive droughts because we do know that, you know, shot creation, especially in the half court, will be an issue for this team. And it feels like they're down 20 or 25. Like, it feels like they're almost shooting themselves out of the game already. But then you look at the score and it's like, oh, wait, they're only down two? And it's because their defense is going to keep them in almost every game because it is that good. And, you know, that was even a silver lining of the Washington game, the opener, as ugly as it was. And while they weren't really in that game for much of it at all, if you looked at the defensive numbers, like, that was a ridiculous defensive performance. It's just they had what will likely be their worst offensive performance of the season in the same game. But no, the defense to me is just unbelievable, you know, both at the individual level and at the team level. The rotations were even more crisp and on point last night. And if they continue to carry this forward, they're going to be competitive most nights just because you can't not be when you're stopping teams from scoring the way they are.
Yeah, listen, as the kids say, man, it's scary hours right now when you have to play the Raptors. Sorry, Cash. I just wanted to hear myself say that on radio. But, yo, tell me, too, about the Boston Celtics. I feel like the Celtics get so much hype every year, and I think it's just because of the disproportional amount of media that maybe cover Boston versus other teams. I keep hearing, listen, I know Jason Tatum's a great player. I think Jaylen Brown is a really good player. But I heard so much hype coming into the season. The Celtics are so deep. They're so equipped to make a run and be a really great regular season team. And I kept saying, why aren't we saying the same things about the Raptors? And, you know, all I'm going to say is just look at last night's performance. Like, I truly believe the Raptors can finish with the second best record in the Atlantic Division. I think Will had predicted this too during the preseason. Like, outside of Brooklyn, I think the Raptors can be better than every other team in that division.
I mean, I still slot Philly ahead of them, even with
bad vibes. Bad vibes, Cash. You gotta value the vibes, not just defensive ratings and offensive ratings, bro.
The vibes definitely are not good in Philly, but you know, I have faith in Joel Embiid's on the court. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility the Raptors finish out of the Sixers, but I'd still slot the Sixers in ahead of them. But no, I agree with you on Boston. I'm not that high on this team this year. I think, you know, their overwhelming advantage a couple of years ago over the Raptors and over many teams was just between Tatum and Brown and Hayward at the time and Kemba Walker. They had four legit, like, go-to shot creators, and they just overwhelmed teams with that because in the playoffs, shot creation and being able to create for yourself is arguably the most important skill needed in the playoffs. And the Celtics just had this unbelievable abundance of it. Well, Hayward's gone. You know, Kemba had kind of flamed out and he's gone now. And you're left with Tatum and Brown often rescuing possessions that seem like they're going nowhere. The defense is lacking right now. I think they'll be good. I just don't think they'll be as good as some people think they are. Like, I don't see them challenging for East supremacy. I have them in actually the same territory that I have the Raptors. And it's like in this kind of middle ground in the East with, you know, the Celtics, the Raptors, the Pacers, I think will be there. The Bulls have looked really good, but I still think they'll end up slotting in that middle ground. The Knicks, I think, will be there. And I think one of those teams will end up, you know, in the playoffs proper, and the rest of them will probably end up in the play-in. But to me, that's where the Celtics are. Like last night, I didn't see the Raptors, you know, beat the crap out of one of the top teams in the East. I saw it as, okay, this is good because the Raptors beat the crap out of one of the teams I think they'll be competing with in the same zone.
Yeah, I will bet you one dinner at Sugo that the Raptors finish with a better record than the Celtics this season.
I mean, I'll take the bet. I don't want to say any disparaging things about any of the establishments in the city, so I'll just take the bet.
By the way, make sure you check out the Scores Pound the Rock podcast hosted by Joseph Cacharo and Joe Wolfon. Joe Wolfon recently, him and his wife Sophie had a baby. Congrats. So he's probably not listening right now, probably doing some family stuff. Listen, next up on this list of topics, shout to my producer, JR, by the way, dropping stats in the rundown for me because he knows I'm not trying to look up these stats. Gary Trent Jr. So this is a strange thing last night. So usually... I mean, Charles Barkley might be the closest. Yeah, media analogy for me. So 90 minutes before the game usually is when we find out about the starting lineups. And Goran Dragic was still in the starting lineup last night. But then when it tipped off, it was Gary Trent in the starting lineup. And he had 20 points. Goran ended up playing only 12 minutes off the bench. What did you think about this move that Nick made with the starting lineup just, you know, in the second game of the season?
I liked it. For one, I thought it gave the Raptors more scoring punch out the gate, even though they started slow again. But in general, I think Jerry gives them more scoring punch to start games, especially with Siakam still out. I think they need it. And I also think, you know, although he hasn't necessarily played great yet and he only played 12 minutes last night, I also do like Goran's kind of veteran steadiness, you know, settling the tide a bit, coming off the bench with a pretty young bench that maybe needs it. And there were times even in the second half where in his few minutes, Dragic did just that, where it seemed like things were getting a little hectic and he just kind of slowed things down. Or, you know, the Raptors had messed up a couple fast breaks and they come back down the next time and Goran pulls it out a bit, you know, and let the play kind of reset. So I liked it. And, you know, I've said this before. I think I said it when Wolfon and I were on with you and Will your first week of doing this show, that, you know, I'm higher on Trent than most people are. I don't think he's going to be a star or anything like that, but I really do think he can be a solid starter for a long time. And I think the reason I like the trade when they made it, you know, not just because they got younger, and I thought the way I looked at it was that even though Gary was going to get paid too, I thought there was more of a chance that Gary Trent's on-court play and value would live up to his next contract than I did the Norm. Because, you know, Norm, for as great as he was, for as efficient as he was, I don't think he was getting better than that. Whereas Gary, I do think, has this, like, two-way ceiling I'm not sure Norm had. Because, you know, Norm's defense, to be honest, was always disappointing to me. And I think Trent's defensive upside is really underrated. And I think you're starting to see some of it. I think we saw it in preseason. I think Nick Nurse has talked about it, seeing it in camp. And now we're starting to see it in the regular season. Gary Trent, you know, he loses some guys off the ball sometimes. I'd like him to be a more attentive off-ball defender. But if you look at his on-ball work for his size, He's really intense. He's really physical, and he's really disruptive. And it led to a bunch of turnovers for the Celtics last night. If he can continue to do that, you know, while providing some secondary, tertiary scoring punch in that starting lineup or off the bench, like, that's a really good, solid two-way player, and he's young, and he can grow with his core.
Yeah, so my producer, JR, had these stats for me. So if they're wrong, make sure you just message him and not me. In the last four games, including the preseason, Gary Trent has at least three steals in every game. Like preseason against Houston when he played, against Washington last night, he had four steals. You know, listen, Michael Grange was on our show yesterday. I was basically asking him, like, why didn't we just keep Norm? And I asked you this, actually, when we walked out of the arena after the home opener. Like, they got similar terms, similar contracts. I liked what Norm brought off the bench, especially last season for the Raptors, recognizing the inconsistencies that he had on the defensive end. I mean, we'll see. I think that's just going to be how we're going to evaluate this Gary Trent deal, is can Gary, over the term of his contract, become an equal or even better contributor than Norm? I don't know if that's fair or not, but I feel like that's the only way we're going to look at it.
Yeah, and I think it's a reasonable expectation, because again, I think Trent is still growing and getting better. And, you know, not that he, you know, I'm not saying Norm's old, but just in terms of, you know, age related development in the NBA, you would expect Trent to get better. And I think even if you just look at the defensive side so far, I think he's already showing signs of growth. So, you know, I think even when, and I think I said this to you when you would ask the same thing when we were walking out of the arena, why didn't they just keep Norm? And I said, I think if this team was built to win either last year or this year, I think Norm would make more sense. I think if this team's trying to grow and be something better than this next year, 2 years from now, then I think Trent really was the better choice.
Yeah, as always, you're right. So before we go to a break, I want to talk about OG Anunoby as well. So this quote-unquote OG Anunoby as quote-unquote number one option so far, if you look at the box scores, is not looking good so far. 3-for-17 against the Wizards. I thought he played a lot better last night, even on the offensive end, even though when you look at the box score at the end, he shot 4-for-18. What's your evaluation of OG Anunoby and this kind of extended role in the offense so far this season?
I mean, obviously it's not going well through two games, but, you know, I'm not that concerned about it. The thing I like to say, you know, all the time about being deep is you end up putting so much stock in these early games because it's the only sample size you have. Like, if, you know, if OG has the season we expect from it and had two games like this in January, it would just be like, ah, he's slumping right now. But when you have two games like this to start the season, it's kind of like the world is falling. What is this? He's not the player we thought he was. But look, he might not, like, I picked him to win most improved this year. Maybe I end up being wrong about that, but he's going to be a lot better than this. He just has to be. And, you know, even in the preseason, I know it was preseason, but his efficiency was off the charts as a number one option. And yes, he wasn't always being guarded by the same quality of players and this and that, but he's an efficient offensive player. And while he might struggle as the number one guy, he's going to be better than this. Like, 3-for-17 and 4-for-18, come on. It can't get much worse than this. I think OG will bounce back. And whether that's tonight, whether that's next week, I don't know. But he'll end up looking like the player that we're more familiar with seeing and the player we expect him to be. And as you said, I thought he was actually a lot better last night. You know, he's missed a ton of open shots. Some of those are going to start falling. And, like, it's unfair to expect him to be a good number one option right now on a good team to boot. So I think there will be struggles. And I think, you know, and as a lot of people were mentioning last night during the game, I think he is the one guy that will be helped the most. Him and Fred will be helped the most by Pascal Siakam's eventual return, because, you know, whether you end up thinking OG is the higher ceiling or Pascal, whatever the case may be, Siakam is much more equipped right now to be the number one guy or something close to a number one guy, even if they're both suited for secondary roles. I think Siakam coming in and taking some defensive attention away from OG and, you know, soaking up some of those possessions will help. Because the other thing with OG too, don't forget, he's often got the hardest defensive assignment on the other end, and it's tough to do both. But he'll be better. Yeah. He has to be.
Well, check Jaylen Brown's shooting last night if you want to see the defensive impact. All right, Cash, go grab an espresso, man. We're going to take a 5-minute break. I'm your host, Alex Wong. You're listening to the Raptor Show Weekend Edition on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, I got five Raptors-related questions for Joseph Cucciaro. And since the Raptors are playing the Mavs tonight, we'll call up the Athletics' Tim Cato. I want to talk to him about all the rumors of Goran Dragic potentially landing in Dallas this season. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Raptor Show Weekend Edition on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Alex Wong, and I'm still joined by the Scores, Joseph Cacciaro. Cash, so I don't think my bosses are listening anymore. They just probably want to check in on the first segment, make sure I didn't wild out too much. So now we can get to some quote-unquote Raptors-related questions that have nothing to do with basketball. Actually, some of these do. Cash, are you ready to answer these five questions?
I'm ready, man. I'm ready to put through the gauntlet.
Let's do it, man. So number one, Scottie Barnes said earlier this week, it was revealed on the Jumbotron at the home opener that his favorite food is baked beans. Cash, I want to know, what is your favorite food?
Oh, man. So, I mean, anyone that knows me knows how much I love food, all kinds of food. So picking one is really not a fair question, but I'd say in the spirit of Scottie Barnes' answer, which was very, very, very basic, I'll stick to the basics and say if it's just like one thing, give it to me, it would be some sort of short pasta like a penne. It has to be spicy, like an arrabbiata with maybe like spicy sausage or something.
Wow. No, that's a great choice. You know, that was actually an alley-oop for you to say chicken feet, because we know you love Chinese food and you're a friend of the community. So I'm going to have to say you missed the layup there. Shouts to, I would pick a barbecue specifically at Sam Wu. Shouts to Sam Wu Barbecue in Bamberg, in Scarborough. Bamberg. Yeah. Sponsor the pod. Also, Frankie Tomatoes. I know you hate this, that I'm going to say this. Rest in peace, Frankie Tomatoes. That was my mom's favorite all-you-can-eat. That's her favorite Italian food. I'm really sorry, man.
Oh, man, again, I don't want to disparage any,
All right. Let's take the rest of this conversation offline. Number two.
Sponsor podcast two.
Number two. So, Faisal and Danielle of Sportsnet joined us a few weeks ago to do a series of Raptors over-unders. And one of Faisal's picks was that he believes that Drake will go to over 12 and a half regular season home games this season. I wanted you to weigh in on this. Where do you land on this over under? Number of regular season games Drake will attend this season at Scotiabank Arena, 12 and a half games.
Over. I'm with Fonzo on this one. Yeah, I think it's going to be over. I think, he's not going to be at every game. Maybe won't even get to half, but, I just need him to show up for 13 and I win this bet. Yeah, I think it's over. He needs 12 more. He's already been to one. He's in the city right now. I don't think concert tours are coming anytime soon, or at least not in the immediate future. So I think you'll be at 13 plus.
All right. I'll bet you one lunch at Manchu Walk that it's going to be an under. Wow. I'm going to be sponsored by an entire food court by the end of the show. So number three, the NBA recently released its top 75 players of all time for the 75th anniversary season that they're currently celebrating. I want to know, if the Raptors were to release a top 75 Raptors players of all time for the franchise, who is the most obscure player that would make your list?
Oh, man. Okay, so this, you know what? He's not that obscure. I was going to go with, like, Walt Williams or Carlos Rogers or something, but you know what I'll go with just a bit off the rate? He's not obscure, although he might be to a younger generation of fans, but those couple years D. Brown played for the Raps, it's somewhat of a deep cut. I know he's more famous because he won the dunk contest in the early 90s. He was not with the Raptors at the time. But I liked him as a Raptor, and I also think he's kind of forgotten as a Raptor because, then Del Curry came in and filled like a similar role on better teams. But D. Brown was like a small combo guard. He played 118 games for the Raptors over 2.5 seasons, and it was in the late 90s, like just as the franchise was kind of turning the corner. Vince was there. He was then part of that first team to make the playoffs. He was later in his career by that point. He didn't like play much defense or do much else, but the guy was a certified gunner. I had actually forgot just how much of a gunner he was, so I went back and looked at it, but more than 65% of his shot attempts as a Raptor came from deep, and he shot almost 39% from there. So D. Brown, not that obscure, but a guy that I think is somewhat forgotten in Raptors lore, and maybe shouldn't be.
Man, this guy waking up on a Saturday looking up D. Brown stats for the show, man.
D. Brown stats just out of nowhere. Come on, man.
This is why Joseph Cacciaro of the Scores is one of the best in the business, man. I was gonna say this is actually not even a deep cut, but I just want to shout out Jorge Garbajosa. I have like an affinity towards that first Brian Colangelo season when he was here, when the Raptors obviously won the Atlantic Division, made the playoffs. I loved all his pickups that year, you know, Garbajosa, Anthony Parker. But I think most Raptors fans, if you're listening, know, you know, the injury that he suffered. But man, I always think, you know, if he was healthy, like, you know, maybe that team could have won that first round series. I don't know.
Yeah, if Jose can throw a pass a little higher than Richard Jefferson can jump.
Come on. No, Jose Calderon slander, man. Come on, it's Saturday. But listen, so next one for you. So we're going to play this clip. Goran Dragic was asked this week if this Raptors team is the most athletic team that he's been on. So let's play this clip and listen to it.
Probably, yeah, definitely. You know, in Phoenix, we got Jared Dudley. He's not so athletic, so JD. And then I play in Houston with Luis Scola. He's not athletic, you know. All my favorite teammates, but here every position is athletic, you know. Probably I'm the least athletic of all those guys, you know, years coming to play, but definitely this is one of the most athletic teams that I was part of.
Cash, I want to know, who is the best unathletic NBA player that you've ever watched?
It's got to be the Joker, no? It's got to be Nikola Jokic. Like,
yeah.
He is, you know, he's naturally, I don't want to get like too much into like ripping the guy physically, but I mean, he is like just a naturally kind of like doughier guy. You know, people have talked about his body and his conditioning for years. There's that famous picture of him when he was young, when, you know, people put it out there to say like, wow, this isn't, imagine someone had told you this would be a future NBA MVP when, you know, he is a little pudgier when he was younger and stuff. Like, he plays the game in slow motion and is better at it than just about anybody on the planet right now. He's literally the reigning MVP. He's one of the most unique players we've ever seen. Did you see that pass last night?
That was ridiculous. He threw, that was like a curveball. That was like a Tim Wakefield knuckler.
Yeah, it's like you starting to show off asking me if I'm having a Negroni at noon. Look, Jokic is he's unbelievable, man, and I think that would have to be my answer. And look, I know that a lot of times, like, the lazy answer with, like, on athletic is people just name white players, but with Jokic, it actually fits. Like, the guy plays in slow motion. He is not in tip-top, at least aesthetically, by what we can see, doesn't look like he's in tip-top physical shape and doesn't play like it either, but is still, you know, one of the handful, if not less, players on the planet. So I think that has to be my answer.
Yeah, just to make Will Lou Google again, I was going to say Arvydas Sabonis.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a good call. I mean, Jokic is Sabonis-esque, I guess, with just more scoring ability, but yeah, that's not a bad call.
Yeah, so last question for you, Cash. The Ben Simmons situation, I guess we're still talking about this on a Raptors show because the Raptors have continually been mentioned as one of the teams that are having conversations with the Sixers. Here's what Daryl Morey, general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, said about the current Ben Simmons situation this week on a radio show.
Right now, any sort of trade, which obviously Ben Simmons wants, the best thing we can do is get role players back. That makes no sense. That will give us no better chance to win the title if we were to move Ben Simmons for role players. So people should buckle in. I mean, this is going to go a long time because our only path, my only job is to help us give the best chance to win the title. Ben Simmons is a difference maker. So if we can get him back, he will help us win the title. If we can trade Ben Simmons for a difference maker, we will do it.
Cash, how do you think this Ben Simmons saga will end? And I guess two-part question. Second part, do you see the possibility of him being traded to Toronto?
I mean, yeah, like, I think it's possible. I think this ends with him being traded, you know, still sooner rather than later. I think free agents and acquisitions made this past offseason, this summer, can be dealt in mid-December, and I think that's when trade talks will really start to heat up, when there are more players available for trades, bigger trades and stuff. Again, it's possible to Toronto, but I wouldn't bet on it. The thing with those Morey comments is, like, they don't really, like, he mentioned having 4 years and all that, and even, like, the one thing he didn't mention there, you know, he mentioned they can win a title with Ben, they can win a title if they get a difference maker in, like, replacement of Ben, but the third option is, well, like, what if you just, like, neither is on the table And now you are playing without Ben, but also without replacements for Ben at all, let alone difference makers or role players, like just no one. And you don't have a chance to win a title that way either. And like he talked about, you know, doing this to capitalize on Joel Embiid's prime. It's like at some point you're wasting Joel Embiid's prime. And I know you don't want to make a bad deal for the sake of making it, but there's going to come a time when Daryl Morey is going to have to realize those are not the only two options here. And one of the options is you sit idly by for a little too long and you maybe waste a year of Joel Embiid's prime. And at what point does Joel Embiid just get absolutely sick of this clown show too?
Yeah, if I put the over-under at January 1st on Ben Simmons being traded, January 1st, 2023, I guess I got to clarify. Do you – actually, 2022. So this season, January 1st, 2022, are you taking the over or under on when he gets traded?
I think he'll be traded in December.
All right, let's bet one meal at Taverniti on that. Oh, listen.
Now I'm talking.
Listen, Cash, I really appreciate you making the time on a Saturday. I appreciate your insight as always. And definitely check out Joseph Cacciaro's work at The Score and subscribe to the Pound the Rock podcast. Legit, my favorite NBA podcast, aside from the one that I'm a part of. Cash, appreciate you, man. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate you. By the way, you cannot eat 10 Big Macs in one sitting. I've been listening. You can't do it. We got late night Chinese food the other night, and you couldn't even finish your half of that. So I'm betting no against you having 10 Big Macs in one sitting, brother.
This guy's throwing a fastball in my head on the way out, man. Yo, I'm gonna message you on WhatsApp after. Please cut this man's phone line off. The Raptors are playing the Dallas Mavericks tonight, and you can listen to it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And I wanted to bring in one of the best writers in the game. He covers the Mavericks. He covers the NBA for The Athletic, Tim Cato, to ask him a little bit about the Mavericks and also all these rumors that we've heard ever since Goran Dragic was signed and traded here about him potentially going to Dallas. So we've got Tim on the line. Tim, how are you, man?
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Good, good. Listen, do you think I can eat 10 Big Macs in an hour? This is like an ongoing thing we have on this show.
I'm leaning no on that. I don't think any human can. I don't think this is not about you, Steven. And I'm going to call you Steven. I'm going to put that right out there right now, Alex. Like,
please don't do that. Steven. Real ones call me Steven. People at the station have called me Steven. You know, I understand how this works. It's only a problem when PR people reach out to me and I'm like, can you please don't put that on like the event list? Like, I actually can't get in if you don't put my real name. No. So no 10 Big Macs. You're saying you seem pretty confident that I can't do this.
It's not about you. It's not about any one man or any person's ability. It is about the consistency of a Big Mac and how I believe it is physically impossible for the human body to consume more than, I don't know. I think you start losing ability about 5.5.
All right.
It's just not possible.
All right. Tune in sometime next year in April when this appears on YouTube. Listen, Tim, so obviously, you know, Goran Dragic is here in Toronto and nobody is expecting him to stay too long. Definitely not for the entirety of the season. Have you heard anything at all, maybe from the summer or even recently, whether the Raptors and Mavericks have engaged in any talks about a potential trade?
They definitely did, right? You know, like the talks are definitely there. The rumors are there. And then you're right that they did pretty much dissipate and disappear. And I think if you realistically think about the scenario and what we know to be true with all the reporting, that they had reached a dilemma in terms of what the Mavericks were willing to send and you know, Toronto just not being willing to trade Dragic for nothing. It makes sense that, you know, both sides would kind of just cease talks for the period of time until the regular season starts, where factors both ways might be changing. So, you know, for Toronto, if they get off to a really, really rough start, and there's even less of a, you know, they can't even pretend like Dragic is, you know, a crucial element of some, you know, playoff push or something like that. That would certainly change the dynamics in Toronto. Dragic could change the situation, change the dynamics by just not being as effective. Certainly, we've seen it did appear he was declining as a 35-year-old player would be expected to last season. And even before that, you know, we've seen his age starting to creep up. If Dragic is just not very effective with Toronto, you know, I think that changes the dynamics. And they could change in Dallas as well, where, you know, one thing that the Mavericks clearly are missing and very clearly look like they're missing, you know, in their season opening defeat to Atlanta, was that, you know, just secondary creation that, you know, they really only have on the roster with Luka and with Jalen Brunson. Enough so, you know, it was bad enough that they put in Trey Burke in the fourth quarter, who, you know, given Mark's comments on vaccination and Trey Burke being the only unvaccinated player and also just not that good of a player, you know, a couple months ago, we were questioning whether he would even make the final roster. And so given all of that, I think that it makes sense that once the two teams, you know, reach this level of stalemate that, you know, both of them, while both still having interest in making this deal potentially, would just be willing to kind of wait it out and maybe reassess a month into the season once both teams have a better idea whether, you know, this deal is crucial one way or the other.
So Raptors fans have obviously zeroed in on a few players, and one of them is Dwight Powell, you know, Canadian, of course, and a really good player. How realistic do you think Dwight Powell would be part of a potential deal?
I think he's the one that makes the most sense. He is the opening day starter. I expect he'll start a decent number of games for as long as he's on the roster. But he didn't look terribly effective in the opener. You know, I expect he'll be better in the future. But you know, this is a team with a lot of big men. I don't know how many are able to be trusted outside of you know, Maxi Kleba and Porzingis. You know, those are the two that, you know, factor into the rotation as well as Powell. But, you know, if Powell, you know, his one skill is rim running. And ever since he came back from his Achilles injury, he hasn't quite looked as dangerous or as explosive in that area. He's still a useful player who does a lot. But if he's going to be a player who's going to be overmatched and outmatched against, you know, really high level, you know, high quality teams like Atlanta was, I do think his use on the roster is diminished because those are the types of teams that Dallas really needs to be competing against. You know, their aspirations are high. So I would say absolutely Powell is probably is an expendable player. Not because the Mavericks are looking to get rid of him, but because what he brings and offers isn't so unique as compared to what a shot creator would bring to this roster. And when you weigh those two things, I think that you would have to view Powell as an expendable piece and also a pretty necessary one, given, you know, you have to find a way to match that money somehow. And his contract is one of the few that is both tradable and expendable for the Mavericks to make a deal like that work.
The Raptors are obviously on this, you know, rebuilding or development track, whichever word, you know, people want to use. And a lot of fans, when they look at a potential deal to Dallas, looking at some of the young players on the roster too. And I'd love to get just maybe some of your insight so that you can let the listeners know, you know, who these players are and kind of what their strengths and weaknesses are. What can you tell me about Moses Brown?
Moses Brown is interesting. He definitely feels like he entered the league 2 years or 2 decades too late. You know, 2 decades ago, he is that type of just massive, hulking big man who, you know, just can dominate size-wise within the paint. He's definitely a rebounder. He definitely has that size. He definitely has a bit of mobility. He's not a stiff. At the same time, even though he's big and massive and pulls down a lot of rebounds, I don't think he's really proven himself as a defensive player. You know, doesn't play to his size at all times, and so he is an interesting prospect for sure. I want to say he's 23 or 24, so still young enough that he could iron out some of these deficiencies, and he has like the raw skills that, you know, you can't teach. I don't think that he's going to be a significant factor for the Mavericks this year. And I do think that out of all the prospects the Mavericks have on their roster, though, I would probably say at this point he's the most interesting one just in terms of, you know, that stuff you can't teach, like I was saying.
What can you tell us about Josh Green?
Josh is interesting. You know, that whole 2020 draft is interesting. We may dive into that later. But Josh is, you know, he's very athletic. He is, I think he projects at best as a solid bench defender, energy guy who can hit, you know, even 35% of his corner threes. And that, you know, he's not going to create his own shot. He can read the game well on offense at times and make clever passes. And there's also times he dribbles right into, you know, a defender, or he picks up his dribble and realizes his only shot is like a, you know, one-footed fadeaway two-pointer. So there's both a combination of times where he is reading the game at a really, you know, at a higher level than you might expect from a second-year player, and other times where he's way behind the speed of the game. So that's to me is his big question, whether he can fully acclimate to the speed of the game, as well as, you know, just developing that three-point shot where it is going to go in just enough for him to justify being on the court. So right now, I still think he's a little bit off from being able to do that. His preseason was more down than up. But I'm not quite given, you know, I certainly have not given up on him as a prospect. It's just something that's going to take at least a couple more years of development and really game time, I think, is what he needs above all else, which I'm just not sure he's going to get a lot of in Dallas.
So what's your prediction when you look at this Goran Dragic situation? Do you think it's just inevitable that at some point this season, the Raptors and the Mavs are going to figure out a way to, and Goran's going to end up on the Mavericks by the end of the season?
I kind of think no. I still think that there's a path where it happens. I don't think it's unlikely, but if I had to guess, either the idea that, you know, Goran is good enough that he's really drawing interest from other teams who probably have slightly more interesting, you know, fringe prospect into the roster prospects to trade. I think that's possible. And I think it's also possible Goran is just less effective to the point that, you know, maybe he is a buyout candidate. And in that case, he probably would end up in Dallas, but, you know, Dallas wouldn't be necessarily needing to make a deal that Goran has justified, and they would find another way to bring him into the roster. I just think that the variables of those two options, with both seem fairly realistic to me, are maybe slightly ahead of the two sides actually working out a deal on this. But again, yeah. I think a lot of it just kind of depends on the factors that we see develop over the next month or two. If Dallas really, really is you know, hurting from this lack of shot creation, and Goran looks like, you know, he could help that in a serious way, I don't see how they justify not trading a Dwight Powell, a Josh Green, a Moses Brown, any of those three players that, you know, Toronto asked for.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, Tim, we're out of time, but I definitely want to bring you back on at some point during the season, because we got to talk Mavs front office gossip. But definitely check out Tim Cato's work at The Athletic. And that does it for us for today. You've been listening to The Raptor Show Weekend Edition on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I've been your host, Alex Wong. Make sure you subscribe to The Raptor Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're live on air Monday to Friday at 2 p.m. and Saturday at noon. Thanks again to The Score's Joseph Cacciaro, The Athletic's Tim Cato, and to JR and Josh for helping produce the show today. Look out for Will's Raptors Reaction Podcast after tonight's game against the Dallas Mavericks, and I'll talk to you on Monday.